new WHFR journal, and we have a little musical interlude. We'll do some at the end of this album was some music played by the New York Philharmonic, directed by Leonard Bernstein, songs from the West Side Story. So we'll fade out with that.
West Side Story on Big Band, Broadway, and beyond. Thank you, Joe, for that very, very entertaining 3 hours this morning. We are in the West Side, are we? Almost the West Side of Dearborn here at Henry Ford Community College, folks. Live now for the next hour is going to be our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. To another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views from Henry Ford Community College, from WHFR.FM, the station making waves. My name is Jay Kornick, and joining me in the studio are my colleagues on our WHFR news team, Amy Powers, our news director, and Dennis Reimars, our news reporter extraordinaire. Welcome, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi,
happy Labor Day weekend.
That's right.
Just beginning. I hope our listeners out there, if they're already getting out early from work or they didn't have to work today, I hope they're driving carefully on the highways. Maybe if they're beyond range already, they're listening in a Wi-Fi zone at Starbucks from WHFR.FM in Brighton or Lansing or something.
But hopefully they stopped right at the range and pulled over to listen for the next hour. Yeah. If so, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Or if you're listening on the MP3 file from our website, WHFR.FM, click on the journal button. And anytime after 2 p.m. on Fridays, the show is there for you to listen to at a time that might be more convenient for you. Or what did they say on that show? If you got to go back and check it out, it's definitely there. And that's the way to catch us again, if not for the first time. Well, we're going to take a look at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. First, the several stories on the front page, just a brief mention for most of these, but Dearborn, City of Dearborn is getting ready to raise, that means lower, I know over the radio it's hard to tell which I said, but to raise, R-A-Z-E, the Quality Inn, and here's the story. City officials say they expect to have the former Quality Inn site, which hasn't been a Quality Inn for a long time, the building's just there, on the northeast corner of Brady. Now, that's sort of on the far east end of West Dearborn, and right across from the Lincoln Mercury dealer, or
right.
Soon to be Lincoln dealer only.
Yeah, no kidding.
I guess actually Lincoln and next door they put in a couple years ago the Cadillac dealer, so there'll be Lincoln Cadillac in that area. But
this would be exactly west of Andiamo, wouldn't it?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, city plans to redevelop the site, which consists of 3 acres of land. improved with 5 two-story motel buildings, an in-ground swimming pool, and an associated parking area. That's what they already have there, folks. It sounds like that's what they're going to keep there. I don't think that's true. Mm-mm. The motel did close in 2005 and is currently vacant. The property, which was home to a gas station, it's a classic gas station, was there from 1929 through the 1950s,
no kidding,
is owned by the city. The property is owned by the city and is tax exempt. Makes sense.
What is it now, like a glorified parking lot? Because I know this car.
Well, you know, I think they've been, and I'm just trying to remember here, I think they've been using a couple of the rooms for temporary shelter for people, whether really? It's homeless or abused or whatever. I've seen a couple of the units as they drive by that seem to have people in them.
Yeah.
And I think since the city owns the property, they could use it for short-term emergency housing, nothing longer than that. I assume it meets the health code, or the city wouldn't put people there even temporarily. And right behind them is the Dearborn Historical Museum's McFadden Ross House office and the museum annex to the north and northwest, which has undeveloped woodland to the north and northeast, a restaurant to the east, Andiamo's, and automobile dealerships, as we mentioned, across Michigan Avenue to the south. So according to the city's Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, environmental site assessments have documented the existence of contaminated soil where the gas station was located. Oh, my gosh. This is from 1929 on.
Yeah.
Where they just, what a surprise.
They dumped car oil, which is it is a hazard. You're not supposed to just dump it like into the either into your trash or in your backyard because it gets into the groundwater and it kills things. So another problem with oil, even if it's not in the Gulf.
Right.
If it's in your backyard, it's a hazard. So the aging and obsolete buildings there, if they're going to tear them down, also contain hazardous materials such as the infamous asbestos.
Sure.
Okay. Once the contaminants are removed, it's interesting that the motel got in there without worrying about the contaminants. Obviously. I mean, the asbestos was common and thought to be okay for many years.
It wasn't considered a contaminant then.
But they didn't even think about or realize the contamination of a former gas station that was there that might have just dumped oil into the soil, either accidentally or on purpose. So now when they redevelop, they have to think about all that stuff, and that's good, of course. The goal of phase one of the project is to create a user-friendly museum campus that allows for a park setting, connection to the Greenway, which we've talked about in this show with Dave Norwood,
right,
which will be a popular and well-traveled trail. Well, it's already there through, it ends at Andiamo's right now. But
Jay, is this right across from the proposed new train station?
Yes, it will be. Well, the train station will be just a little bit west of a little bit east of the Lincoln Mercury dealer. Right now, it's a couple of large parking lots. It used to be overflow parking for the Lincoln Mercury dealer.
Right.
And that was donated, or they got that from Ford Land, and the dealership is now putting their cars at a Ford lot, actually, a Ford main headquarters. I noticed a whole lot of brand new Lincoln Mercury MKXs and so on just piled up there neatly, but you know,
piled next to each other.
Yeah, so no. I assume that's from the Lincoln Mercury dealership losing that, or they still have a few cars there, but it's basically vacated now and it's ready for the new train station to start construction whenever they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting because we didn't know what was going to happen, but it looks like the first step is to, of course, clear away the buildings and phase two is the demolition of motel buildings, environmental remediation of the property, and the creation of the Dearborn Historical Museum's, they got a name for it already, Heritage Park.
Oh, there's a Heritage Park in Taylor.
Well, I'm afraid so.
Cats.
Just like how many town centers do we have around here?
Don't get Jay started, right?
Aren't there some new names under the sun?
What about Fairlane? It hasn't
how about
been used
Old that. Heritage or New
Ooh.
Heritage?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like New England.
I like it.
Yeah, like the WHFR Journal. There's a Dearborn Journal on cable TV, which was the original name of this show, and the city stole the name. Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't know, but I know Mayor Guida was very unhappy when I pointed out to them that they had taken the name of our show.
He was unhappy for us? No.
He was unhappy that I found out and was criticizing him for stealing it. Not that they did, but I'm just saying it's appropriate for the city to call their journal the Dearborn Journal. And we cover Dearborn and the surrounding areas.
Right.
So it was a little bit of a misnomer. In fact, we cover all kinds of things that we think has an important local impact on
Absolutely.
The show that the other stations aren't talking about. So the park is what they have in mind there right now, which will be better developed. It'll provide the gateway to the downtown shopping district, allow bicyclists and pedestrians safe travel along Michigan Avenue and Brady Street. Along Michigan Avenue, what, for 15 feet there.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the park is going to do, because across the street is like a, isn't that a Corvette parking lot or something?
Across Brady, yes.
Across That's Brady. So they're not going to take that over. So,
no.
You know, I've been talking about a bike path on Michigan Avenue east to west. Well, that's radical. I know,
but you were more you felt it was more needed further east, did you not? Because there's that huge disconnect between east and west over
that's
by Southfield.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. At least there are sidewalks, although it's somewhat hazardous for bikers mm-hmm. in West Dearborn, because the stores put out signs and flower pots and so on.
Yeah,
it's not the number of people that walk right next to Michigan Avenue, but it is not that easy for a bicyclist. To if they want to use the area as transportation, that is for exercise and for getting to work, you don't want to have to stop much
right.
or frequently or constantly be swerving to avoid anything that's unsafe, of course. So a bike path is the answer, and that's not the city's issue, folks. That has to do with Wayne County,
right.
who controls Michigan Avenue in that area, or the state of Michigan.
Somebody right.
controls it. Okay. So it's coming. I don't know what the phase is. The third phase, they don't have a time frame on these. Well, they do at the end. It says the timetable for the project is unknown. It's estimated, that's what we want, that redevelopment of the property could be completed in 2 to 5 years. The third phase includes the construction of a student housing facility, which would serve the student body of the University of Michigan Dearborn. Now, I thought that was already ruled out.
So did I.
I thought you have, I hate to say that the Press and Guide might have something wrong, but the last I heard was the U of M said they didn't want it there, that they would buy land closer to the Fairlane Town Center across Evergreen, which is hazard to cross, but that's what they wanted to do, and that's what they were going to do, by golly. I don't see that, unless they've changed their position on this, and they may have, it hasn't been reported that they have, that this is going to happen. So I don't think there's going to be a third phase. And I think it'd be great to have another park, a little park area in Dearborn Historical Museum. Advantage there on the corner.
Yeah. Well, one question I have is there are a couple buildings right on U of M's property that look like they used to be dorms, and I think they were used in administrative capacity. They're not mm-hmm. being used at all right now. It has its own designated right. parking. That would be ideal.
They moved their child care development center, too. That's now in a very fancy former Ford Motor Company building next to Edsel Ford High School.
Okay.
So all of the child care, which is problematic to me, if you're a student at U of MD and you want to have child care for a short period, you have to drop them off down on Outer Drive next to Edsel Ford High School.
And they're
then
not
come
right
to class.
To, exactly.
You know, but they're not on campus anymore.
Right,
I know
right.
because my granddaughter is going to start there this fall
at
the U of MD facility, and it's not on campus. I said, oh, Christy, I can just pick her up myself maybe my daughter's Christy, when I'm done at WHFR. And, oh, no, it's not on their campus anymore. And those buildings are vacant. Now, some of their other dorms that they had have been turned in, and this was like a decade or more ago. They were actually dorms for married students.
Mm-hmm.
So they have nice bathrooms, and well, they originally were nice, but now they're
faculty, nice
faculty
too.
Offices, whether they're part-time faculty or full-time, but they've been faculty offices for a long time. So, and I'm sure they have a good size enrollment like we do, and mm-hmm. they can't really compromise those buildings, but you're right. There's still some buildings on campus, and they still seem to have open space there. If they're going to go to the trouble to build a whole new building at U of MD, why would it be across busy Evergreen
right.
where it's a hazard to cross unless they build an overhead bridge or something, which I bet they're not going to do? Why not just put it somewhere else on their campus? I just don't understand that.
Right.
They seem to have enough space there, although I know you want green space. You want trees and flowers and grass. You want it to look nice. And they have it pretty well developed now, but I bet there's room for I don't know, a 4 to 6 story dorm.
So.
I mean, small size, but you know.
You know, in regard to your comment about the bike paths, Dave Norwood at the Sierra Club panel did say that because it's a county issue, he said that there may not be money right now to specifically put in bike paths, but he said as they're repairing the roads and as they're doing work in those areas, the bike paths are factored in and put because it's not an additional expense.
And I'm
it's
thinking when the train station goes in,
the
county is going to have to redo Michigan Avenue, certainly in that part,
You're
a lot.
Exactly
and then,
right.
And it's supposed to be intermodal, which mm-hmm. means many kinds of transportation, including people on bikes, can easily get there and get out of there. And so how are they going to cross Michigan Avenue? How are they going to go to the north? And because the train station is going to be on the south. So I think that might be the time. That could be just a couple years away.
Exactly.
The train station, as I understand it, well, they have the money, of course, for it, $26, $28 million. They should be ready to break ground soon. They have to, I think. I think there's some reason they have to use this money from the federal government. It'll be lost in 2 years.
Exactly.
So it's going to be there, which means the road, Michigan Avenue, has to be reconstructed. I just hope they take into account the issues for true intermodal use.
I would think so, because Dave Norwood actually bikes to today. He took his bike to work because
sure,
it's casual.
Friday.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean, he's the key man on this. So that's good news for us.
Since we're sort of touching on environmental stuff, one of the pieces of paper I didn't bring with me is the latest email. And Dennis, did you get it from Ian Tran, who is the U of MD student coordinator for the Environmental
Sustainability Council? I did not get that email.
Okay. They're so gung-ho on these issues. This is the main point. They're having a meeting at the U of MD campus at 3 p.m. this afternoon. Okay. Now, it only was in an email for those people who were already interested. But, I mean, my gosh, Labor Day weekend, 3 p.m. Friday, and they're going to have a meeting? Those that are already committed and interested
sure.
are going to show up. Did you find out about that?
I found out just now, and I'm going to be there.
Oh, just now.
Mm-hmm. From you.
Yeah, and I don't know where, though. I mean,
check in with the Interpretive Center was where they had planned the next meeting. Okay. This sounds kind of impromptu, though.
This is just this is a high-level talky-talk about future plans. So it's not a general Sustainability Council
gotcha.
Open meeting.
I see.
But they've got some other things coming up next week, and it was all in that email. So
okay.
I guess, sorry, folks, it's not in the paper. But things are going on behind the scenes, which is the good news. And people that are involved, like Dave Norwood of the mm-hmm. city and Dennis and myself, we're going to try to stay on top of this and let you know. Things have to keep moving ahead, because when things change or have to change, like the new train station has to happen or we lose the money and we need the train station, then all these other related sustainability projects and transportation projects need to be kept in mind at the same time, because that's the time to incorporate it, not later by tearing something down and rebuilding.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good point.
Well, anyway, so yeah, I'm sorry I don't have that with me, but I think it's just really for the people who are heading up different subcommittees and have different positions with either Sierra Club or the U of MD Student Environmental mm-hmm. Association.
And Ian's working so, I mean, they're hand in hand right now.
Right.
Just a remarkable young man.
I haven't met him either, but maybe we can get him on the show sometime.
Great
Ian
kid.
Tran.
Mm-hmm. All right.
T-R-A-N, Amy says.
High energy.
Yes. Ooh, well, that's what we need here.
Okay.
Dearborn Heights, brave city council decision. They're going to continue funding from their own general budget the neighborhood stabilization plan, which comes from the U.S. government, money for that. But the city hasn't been reimbursed for $300,000 of the $600,000 it is waiting to get back from the federally funded program. Marge Horvath said no, because they don't have the money. But other six members on the council said, yes, we're going to do it no matter what. And you might ask, what is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program?
Is that like Save Our Pools?
It's NSP, so Save Our Pools is...
SOP.
SOP.
You're
yeah.
right.
Sopping wet.
That's right.
Unfortunate. But the program focuses on getting foreclosed properties back on the market for low to medium income households to help revitalize neighborhoods. So stabilization means you don't have too many mm-hmm. people coming and going or derelict homes
right.
to worry about. And so the city has this grant to cover the cost of the various programs. Sarah Traxler, principal planner of McKenna Associates, said that she understands Horvath's perspective. McKenna Associates is the city's NSP consultant. Ooh, they need a consultant in order to figure out what to do. And so that's what it's all about, folks, and it was very brave. Corporation Counsel Gary Miatke said his advice was to hold off on suspending NSP expenditures until Counsel knows for sure whether this would be the case. In other words, sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy about the money not coming in and other problems, and everything would go belly up here. So they followed Corporation Counsel recommendation, legal recommendation, to they might have to stop funding it themselves, but they're you know trying to stay positive and trying to keep their communities going. And so it's you say a brave move. Well, it wasn't a close vote. It was 6-1 against Harvard.
And that's Dearborn Heights, yes?
Yes.
Well, right. Did you I think you probably are aware of that. The foreclosure workshops.
Yeah.
And that
the workshops here, yes.
September 9th at Centennial.
And is that to keep you in your home?
Exactly. And they're
I
working.
I mean, this seems like once they're vacant, the story that Jay just read,
exactly.
once they've, well, you know.
That's kind of why I thought it was such a great segue.
it is. And you know what?
Preventive medicine is
yes.
the way to best way to do it.
Which I think goes hand in hand with basically the Obama administration's program that's already in effect to help folks that are in or facing the foreclosure process renegotiate their
Absolutely.
Loans. And
well, this is from representatives from the it's a HUD housing council.
Okay.
We don't have time with our numerous stories we cover in the show to go over the details, but the press and guide from last Sunday, I recommend you read all the way through there, because this NSP, Neighborhood Stabilization Program, the way it's happening in Dearborn Heights is somewhat controversial with the residents. And just as an example, residents are up in arms over the rehabilitation of what's called the Fenton property within Dearborn Heights. And he said he believes spending $68,000 on it is throwing money down the drain. So some of the homes that are being saved or demolished or renovated, they think is just the wrong thing to do because of various health and safety issues and whether we should bulldoze it or renovate it or wait for someone to build a home there.
Right.
So it is kind of controversial, the many different options they have. Maybe that's why they have a consultant. I don't know.
Right.
But I think it's a good idea not to, as their lawyer said, not to end the money for that. Okay.
Cool.
I don't know if we want to get into Morris Goodman. Labor Day, of course, is the time when people jump in their cars and try to take a trip. And because of the cost of airplane tickets and traveling longer distances always seems to cost more money. And because you only have 3 days, the automobile is in essence the big moment. Morris Goodman, editorial commentator for the Dearborn Press and Guide, he has an essay from last Sunday on page 6A, which the headlines, and by the way, these people, whether you're, and Dennis knows this as an editor himself of a previous paper and of the Mirror newspaper here at Henry Ford Community College, the story headlines are always decided by the editor. Now, maybe they can be suggested by the writers,
mm-hmm.
but depending on the space and how sensational you want to make the story sound,
that's true.
The editor has the final call, and often they don't even want to have a title suggested, and so sometimes titles are go a little astray here. But the title of Morris's editorial is "Real Patriotism." Buying a quality new American-made car, as if he's saying real patriotism is when you buy a quality new American-made car. Maybe some are not high in quality. Although his essay implies that most all American-made cars are high in quality now. That he quotes, and I'm not going to read the article, just summarize it here for you, that some friends of his, and they know who they are because he had dinner with them last weekend, they own two Hondas. And he asked them, why did they buy Hondas? And they said, oh, reliability.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the early days, like 20, 30 years ago, foreign cars, especially Hondas and Toyotas, were clearly made better and more reliable and even, therefore, safer. If they don't fall apart and the brakes work, they're safer than many of the U.S. cars who had a terrible record. I mean, I had a conversation with a salesperson in the 70s, and I said, I'm not thinking of buying a U.S. car right now. I was looking at a Chevy Camaro at the time, because I hear, you know, quality control is really bad. I mean, I've read about it and so on, and, you know, you get delivery of one, and there's 12, 15 things wrong with it, you know, mm-hmm. things hanging on with chewing gum. I mean, really bad quality, even when you take delivery. And the salesman, it was only a salesman, not an official spokesperson for Chevy. Can I say Chevy?
Uh-huh.
Is the big to-do about whether you can call Chevy a Chevrolet a Chevy anymore. And yes, you can.
GM, as long as you're not putting it in an official note to employees.
But Chevrolet That's right. still has a website, Chevy.com. So they haven't given up on it themselves. They understand the
like a rock.
The
That's right.
the heritage issue here. The issue was, he said, hey, what do you expect? They're just made by humans. Well, today most cars are not primarily made by humans. They're made by robots that are programmed by humans, though, and designed by humans still, for a while anyway. And but then I point out, well, yeah, what about the Japanese? Aren't they human? I think it's some sort of anti-Semitic
made
thing.
By
is
humans.
That Japanese are humans? Even the cars
really.
Coming in the 70s were made in Japan. That was before the U.S. Honda and Toyota factories were based here, but made by humans. Yeah, but humans can do a better job than this.
Yeah,
the second largest purchase, single purchase in a person's life after their home, if they buy a home, is their car. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars here. This is a big deal. You're in debt for 5 to 6 years if you know, and even a lease, you've got a 3-year commitment or something, and then you're high and dry with no equity at the end of that time too. So it's a big deal to get something that is high in quality and reliability. But he points out, and rightly so, is that most cars formerly thought of as made in America and going to American profits and American workers, Ford and GM and Chrysler, have now, you know, pretty much equaled that. And some quality studies, was it J.D. Powers, is a quality analyst surveying customers, have pointed out how Buick and several other American cars, Ford certainly, very top in quality, maybe even better than Toyota and that other
Honda.
Japanese company, Honda, yeah, at times, in terms of some models. Now, they always talk about initial quality, which means when you take delivery,
right,
how bad is it? And then also after a couple of years, you know, after the first year, second year, third year, and the so-called U.S. manufacturers doing fine. I just want to say that, of course, patriotism is a term that can make a lot of people stop thinking. And here, a college-based radio station that we are, and a college professor myself, you never want to make people stop thinking. So to say, why should I do it, and to throw out a single general abstract concept like patriotism, that cuts off thinking. Now, it means that you want to feel proud of and faithful to the country you are living in. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that, especially if things are going well. I personally think when things are going badly, a good patriot is also a good critic. And the person, Samuel Adams, who first said that patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel, their ultimate defense for whatever they're doing, in other words, I'm being patriotic, without... You know, it's a good defense because it makes people stop thinking. But when you think about it, what is an American-made car? What about the profits of American-made cars? We know that the only car that is made in Detroit, okay, that is actually helping people who are workers in a Detroit factory is the Jeep Grand Cherokee right now. That's the last. Now, I think Hamtramck, are they still doing something for Cadillac, or is that gone? But nonetheless, Detroit, literally, the so-called East Jefferson plant, they're building Jeep Grand Cherokees. But where is the profit going? The profit is going to Fiat. Okay, Chrysler is not a U.S. company anymore, folks. The profit is going to Fiat of Italy. Now, God bless him for coming over and bailing out Chrysler, or we wouldn't even have the East Jefferson plant, maybe, if Chrysler would have gone belly up. But what about the product, the parts in GM or Ford cars that are made here? And let's point out that many GM and Ford cars are not even made in America. Okay, it's not like GM and Ford are so paid. I mean, the Ford Edge is made in Canada. And nothing wrong with Canadians, but and a lot of their cars are made in Mexico. A lot of GM cars are made in Mexico. A lot of Chrysler cars, like the PT Cruiser, which is in its last year, that's made in Mexico. And then the parts in cars that are made here, like the Ford Mustang, is made either in River Rouge or in the Mazda plant in Flat Rock. I think it's in Flat Rock.
I do too.
The total assembly is down there. It used to be in River Rouge that they were doing Mustang assembly on the early cars, but I think it's moved down there. And of course, Ford used to have a controlling interest or close to it in Mazda, but they're still using that facility, and they're slowly trying to move away from Mazda.
So you're not comfortable with the term assembled in
no.
America?
Because I think my bigger point was the majority of parts that they put in the Mustang are not made in America. Okay, they're not assembled in America. They're brought here to be assembled in the Mustang, but 80-90% of the parts are actually outsourced outside of America and shipped here. The radios come from outside of America. And even the radios, as our WHFR contract engineer who worked for Ford for many years in their audio department said, even inside a Ford radio, 80% of those parts come from different places outside the world. Besides all of them coming from outside the U.S., the parts come from the Philippines, they come from Hong Kong, they come from South America, the speaker comes from...
They're not limiting their suppliers to American suppliers.
Right.
To, you know, keep
so buying
with
American
a patriotic,
doesn't mean the same thing.
It's just nobody can easily say, well, it's patriotic to buy a U.S. car. Well, what is a U.S. car? I guess you could say at least if it's assembled here, then you're giving at least some jobs to workers, when almost every car that's even assembled here is with parts and supplies that come from outside the country.
Right.
So I guess that would be good. So therefore, I guess it's okay to buy a Jeep Grand Cherokee because at least that's workers here in the area, or a Mustang. But that's about as far as you can go with your patriotism line because, you know, the profits of the Jeep Grand Cherokee ultimately go to Fiat of Italy. Ford Motor Company is an international corporation. They take their profits if they make some in America and invest in, and Ford is, I just read an article, Ford is way behind in investing in China. What's the number one car maker in China? GM.
Oh. Okay.
General Motors sells more cars in China, and they bought the right locations. They needed a sort of they have to ally with some company that's already Chinese in order to be legitimate in China. The government requires that sort of, you got to come in by our door. But
which is
GM
fine.
Is selling big time, everything from the Chevy Cruze to the Buick Regal, and they're positioned with dealerships all over China now to explode. They're going to be huge profit margins there. So if in fact, it might help support GM in America to pay off the debt to Obama to be there. But so the profits of these companies, well, but they pay taxes in the U.S., in Detroit. Yeah, but they also pay taxes to all these other countries of the world where they are. And Ford is moving into China, but they're way behind.
Right. So what you're saying, this is all a global thing.
It's a global
thing. It really is difficult to buy.
The patriotism issue, and I know some people don't like the idea of the one world philosophy, or certainly not, you know, Glenn Beck or Alex Jones from Texas, you know, the one government idea. But the businesses, the corporations have already done it. Okay, they're already controlling the world. As we know in music in WHFR, 110 hours a week, a locally produced indie music. Three companies, Universal, Sony, and was it Time Warner Atlantic, whatever they're calling themselves these days. 80% of the world's music is from three companies. They are international companies. It doesn't matter where they have their headquarters. They pay taxes all over the place. They employ people all over the world. Australia, Universal Australia, we had to ship our CDs to. No, they have factories making CDs and music in Australia. Okay, so, I mean, all the companies that are making huge profits these days are international. They're not really U.S. companies, or, sure, maybe some of them pay a few more dollars a year in the U.S. than another one. But in terms of number of workers, all these multinational companies, as they're called, are mostly not in the U.S. I mean, add up all their workers and all the taxes they pay outside this country. They're not U.S. companies anymore, and they'd be crazy to do so. They'd be losing out on all the profits that would help their company stay in the U.S. And in fact, Ford finally got smart. They were making fantastic cars in Europe, great performing, great handling, high fuel economy cars. And now, their new master plan is, let's get some of those back in this country. Mm-hmm. Let's start making them here, exactly like we were so smart in Europe to do, and so famous and such high quality. Well, maybe we should introduce them to the U.S. Yes, like maybe you should have done that 20 years ago, because you had those same good cars, Ford Motor Company, in England, in France, in Europe. And in fact, even Pontiac was desperate for a couple of good cars. They had to go to Pontiac, a GM of Australia, the Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N, big brand in Australia. That's what the last couple small Pontiacs.
Named after an actor.
The G6.
I thought it was Caulfield.
Okay. Very quick, guys. The G6 and the last, was it GXP, like a Grand Prix, all based on the Holden cars that they were already making in Australia and making them good. And they were pretty good, actually, better than what we thought of in the U.S. So, but it was all the same company. Why not bring, if you've got people in your company that are smarter in Australia or in France or England in making the cars for your company, get those worldwide. If they're making the best ones, then everybody uses the molds and the parts, and get those better cars here, too. So I just have to, and Morris, I understand the sentiment, and at least I understand that maybe you feel sympathy for workers in factories in the U.S. or into the Detroit area, even. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have a Honda plant in Michigan, or do we? There's somebody's got a Honda plant in Troy, or was going to, maybe. But we do have, of course, some GM plants in Lansing. They're making something there. Okay. Is it a Buick? I think the Buick which used to be in Flint, is now gone to Lansing, mm-hmm. where they used to make Oldsmobile. So,
that's right.
I mean, we're making some cars for some corporations in Michigan.
But it's not just cars. I had a problem with my internet. I called a phone call. The person had a little bit of an accent. So I said, hey, where are you? They said Guam.
Guam.
You know, and this is a major internet provider here in this area that started in this area. So it's just kind of weird.
I like to choose Guam. I like to chew Guam several times a day.
Yes, I do.
I had to go.
I don't love my kids chew Guam.
I already, really?
No.
Oh.
My dentist recommends it.
Oh. Yeah. Of course he does. Yeah. Mine used to send me out with a pack of gum, you know. See you in 3 months.
Pretty desperate for news here. Okay.
No,
Okay, it's Labor Day weekend, folks. We've got to break away from the bad puns and listen to Jim Hightower for 2 minutes. His first comment, and you've probably heard this before, big banks are gouging customers. Yeah, even with the new so-called bank reform. So you got to try to avoid that if you don't get into that mess. And, of course, Labor Day. What should you do on Labor Day itself, on Monday? He's got some ideas. WHFR.FM.
Poker game that I've played in the past.
Let's start that over. You missed the first 4 seconds. Here you go.
High-low is a poker game that I've played in the past. But America's biggest banks have twisted it into a flim-flam in which the deck is deliberately stacked against their own customers. The key to this scam is the fee that bankers assess when your account is overdrawn. Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and others are raking in billions from these fees, and lately they've been dealing a joker called high-to-low check clearing that takes even more from unsuspecting customers. It works like this. Let's say you have $200 in your checking account, and you write checks for 10 small purchases totaling $200. Then, at the end of the month, you pay your utility bill of $200. Oops! There's nothing left in your account to cover that, so you owe a $35 overdraft fee for your mistake. But your bank statement arrives a week later, showing $350 in overdraft fees. What happened? A little fast shuffling by your friendly mega bank. Rather than processing your checks in the order in which you wrote them, the bank cleared your highest dollar check first, even though you wrote it last. By cashing the $200 check for the utility bill, the bank totally drained your account. This meant that each of those 10 small checks you wrote earlier were cleverly shifted into overdraft status, forcing you to pay a fee on each of them, thus stinging you for $350 rather than the $35 you really owed. As one victim said of this finagling, it's crooked. At least one federal judge agrees, having ordered Wells Fargo to repay $203 million to California customers who were jacked around by the high-to-low scheme, referring to it as gouging and profiteering. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, but highly lucrative. Wells Fargo says it will continue to play the high-to-low gouging game while it appeals the judge's decision.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
America's corporate chieftains must love poor people, for they're doing all they can to create millions more of them. They're knocking down wages, offshoring everything from manufacturing jobs to high-tech, reducing full-time work to part-time, downsizing our workplaces, busting unions, cutting health care coverage, and canceling pensions, while also lobbying in Washington to privatize Social Security, eliminate job safety protections, restrict unemployment benefits, kill job-creating programs, and increase corporate control of our elections. It's said that the poor and the rich will always be among us, but nowhere is it written that the middle class will always be there. In fact, it is a very recent creation in our society and an unavailable dream for most people in the world. America's great middle class literally arose with the rise of labor unions and populist political movements in the 1800s, finally culminating in democratic economic reforms implemented from the 1930s into the 1960s. Social Security, wage and hour laws, collective bargaining rights, unemployment compensation, the GI Bill, the Interstate Highway Program, civil rights laws, Medicare, Head Start, and more provided the national framework necessary to sustain a middle class for the American majority. This essential framework was not given to us by corporate executives and politicians. Indeed, they sputtered, spewed, and fought every piece of it tooth and nail. Rather, it came from union-led grassroots movements, organizing for structural change to serve the common good of America's people. This is Jim Hightower saying, this Labor Day, we see corporate executives and their politicians relentlessly dismantling that framework piece by piece. And we see the middle class disappearing and poverty rising. But, as labor icon Joe Hill said, don't mourn, organize. Yeah, time for us to organize again.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
This is the new WHFR Journal for September 3rd, 2010. Hope you're having a great day out there and planning to have, weather's nicely cool today. I'm really enjoying this, but a great weekend that you can be with family and friends. And be safe. Watch your driving. We were talking about cars right before Jim Hightower's comments. Driving is the control of a dangerous weapon. Okay, that's why you have to take driver ed. That's why you have to get a license. That's why you have to renew the license. Although I wish, like teachers and other people, you'd have to renew your road test, or at least your eye test. You know, they haven't talked about the problems with senior citizens, although there's many problems.
Every few years you do. When you have to get a new physical license, you do have to take that eye test
again.
I haven't
yet.
Really?
No.
Well, you must have some in with
the Secretary
of State. Oh, that's right.
No, because I'm old, I keep forgetting.
Yeah, the memories.
The last time I renewed my license, they asked me for the eye check. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So you wrote it out.
And probably had to take a little test, a 10-question test.
I don't remember
that. Oh, I think you did. I bet you did.
Did they give you a memory test?
Yeah, that's...
I don't remember.
Do you remember how to drive?
I was right there for you.
What is driving? But I think I'm definitely in favor of licensing. I think that the driver ed programs we have in this country now, since the high schools aren't doing it, the schools are not doing it anymore, or most of them aren't. I don't know, some still are. But the standards have gotten very lax. I talked about it in the show before. When I took driver ed required in high school, well, it was an option, okay, but it was a big-time class, a full semester with hundreds of hours in small groups on the real highway, not in the back lot, okay? Mm-hmm. And it was very rigorous. It was very intensive. And learning rules and laws in a sit-down classroom for, it was like an hour a day for a whole semester, 15, 16 weeks, 5 days a week. So it was, you know, it was, and yet that's not as rigorous as the licensing for people to drive in England.
What do they have to do in England?
England, not only a road test, you are taught on a special track that can be made icy even in warm weather, how to skid and control the test car even in icy, slick conditions. You know, how to do power slides and curves. And that's required even on when you get to the licensing part. So your road test people have to train you on skidding and handling a car when there's little traction, but also when you have to take the actual official test. In fact, there's a movie by a famous British director, and it was something called Happy or whatever, Happiness, and it was all about this young elementary school teacher. I mean, she's in her early 20s, and she's always happy. No matter what the problem, she's happy.
I like her already.
And she is a problem solver, but she's always positive, and no matter how people try to bring her down. Well, one of the problems she has, though, she's not perfect, she can't get her driver's license in England.
Oh, I have to see this movie.
You know, she takes...
Because it's so hard.
She takes one program after another. She drives every instructor totally crazy, and it's one-on-one.
Oh, I have to see
on
this.
On the roads. And there's just, it just shows the latest instructor, she's driving crazy on the roads. But she's still happy and positive, and I'll learn eventually. And just, but that's
don't ruin it.
Yeah, when she comes to America.
They actually have, I'm thinking, gee, she would have got a license easily in the U.S. That all these things that they were expecting of her, no, we don't care about that.
No.
Give her the license. Let her get out there and smash up cars and that. But
well, they don't encourage that part.
No, but I'm just saying that we could do a little more, and it's not a police state or one world government or anything, but we had, you know, cars are dangerous weapons, and we need to learn how to drive them properly. Okay, one more thing about this, and that is this month's Car and Driver magazine, which is one of the key automobile testing magazines. They have very good people that know how to not just drive, but also analyze. They hired this company. They spent tens of thousands of dollars on a company that could do analysis. Each car, they're testing 8 cars for handling. And this is the one thing that Morris Goodman didn't mention. He mentioned performance. he mentioned reliability, probably, well, he didn't directly mention safety.
No.
But handling, that is, how well a car stops and accelerates, that's important too, but not, you know, muscle car acceleration is needed, but it's got to accelerate, good strong acceleration when you need it. How it handles it is, can you turn left and right sharply to avoid an accident? Will the car fly out of control? Will the wheels, the tires fall apart if you try to do that? So all around good handling is, to my mind, and car and driver, the best criteria for buying a really good car. And most people don't talk about it because it is complicated. Well, they got seven or eight cars up to $100,000. That was the Corvette. One of the Corvette models cost that much. And they even have one now that costs more than that. All the way down to the Volkswagen GTI,
okay,
which is a four-cylinder, 200 horsepower, that's all. A little coupe, little
it's adorable
sedan.
Though.
Yeah, it's adorable. And it's always been called good handling. And also a Mazda RX-8, which is rotary engine, but also you can get one for under $30,000.
Hmm.
And they put over $80,000 of test equipment, including a laser beam device at every corner of the car, so that when it went left or right, how much did it tip over or whatever. But
wow,
that and other electronic, $80,000 of test equipment was added to each car during this test. And so it's a whole section in here, the whole issue, 14 pages about the best handling cars in America from all these different price categories. And of course, they had to limit it.
Sure.
But it's interesting to see how well the Volkswagen did compared to the Corvette.
Yeah.
German engineering.
Well, that's right, even though I think the GTI is made in Mexico.
Oh.
Well,
Spanish engineering.
Yeah. They make all the Jettas in Mexico, including
okay,
the Jetta Sportwagon, which you can get their great little diesel engine in, but I won't go into
or
that
German
now.
Engineering assembled, yeah, in Mexico.
So what I'm saying is, folks, if you have the driver skills, too, and you're brave enough,
isn't it?
in an emergency situation to swerve, and you can trust your car to that. For example, I always recommend when the snows first fall and people start going crazy and have accidents, actually train yourself. Give yourself a little, go to a large empty parking lot like Henry Ford Community College on Sundays when there's no cars here, hardly any, and practice skidding around, controlling it, low speed, you know, and get to know your car in a skid and lack of traction so that you can be bold enough to stop and handle the car at for avoiding an accident.
Yeah, you don't want to know how good or bad it stops your first time in an emergency.
I don't really care if there's seven or nine airbags in the car.
Right.
I want to avoid the accident so right, the airbags don't hit me in the
face.
That's
a really good point. Yeah.
You know,
if
you're in the accident, you smashed up your car. Somebody's bound to get hurt, even with an airbag, either yourself or in the other car. To avoid an accident is the highest criteria of good driving,
yeah,
in a difficult situation. And the only way you can do it is get the cars that are best handling. And so Morris and others, you know, broaden your horizon and maybe read Car and Driver October issue. And for those people that want to buy cars that actually are better, I recommend Car and Driver magazine, Road and Track. They have websites you can get to for free, carandriver.com, roadandtrack.com, Automobile Magazine. I think it's just automobile.com. And by the way, the headquarters of all these magazines in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
That's awesome.
Lovely.
That's where they test the cars. They have all their editorial offices, all these different companies, all on the same street. And also another one, folks, which doesn't print a hard copy, but it's online, windingroad.com. Okay. Wonderful.
Now, Car and Driver, like Consumer Reports, does not have advertising, correct?
Oh, no, no, no.
This
Consumer Reports is no. But no, Car and Driver, but I think...
Is it commercial?
I think they are very aware that if they trash a big sponsor, advertiser too much, it's going to hurt them in the long run. The only magazine that I read that can avoid that, because they're fearless. They're just the largest car testing and reviewing magazine in the world that sells more issues is called Car Magazine. It's from England.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy it in the U.S. if you go to like a Borders or sometimes Barnes & Noble will have it too. And it's about $6 or $8 because it comes from England. But it's huge. It's monstrous. And they're completely fearless. If they hate a car, they really tell you why they hate it. And they just trash it for months, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Car and Driver always talks about, and of course it seems objective, of course, the highs and the lows, mm-hmm. the good, the pros and the cons, the goods and the bads about every car. And that's true. There are good points about every car. But when you say that all you can find that's good is, you know, it's got a soft front seat or something, that's not the one to buy,
no,
maybe, folks.
Relative,
I mean,
sure.
if it's got bad handling on the highway and bad brakes and, oh, my gosh,
wait,
you
how,
know, avoid
how
it
soft?
Like the plague. You know, if you really are concerned about safety, number one,
yeah.
and about avoiding accidents. So handling is an important criteria. You might want to look at the special article in Car and Driver this month, but read these regularly, maybe before you buy your next car. I'm looking for a new car, if I can find something better than what I already have, in December when my lease comes up. I'm looking at Fords. I'm trying to look at Fords. Okay, just so Mayor O'Reilly, don't worry here. I haven't gotten a Nissan yet. And I may keep the one I have because I do love it, and it is one of the best handling cars in the world. But I think it's called caronline.com is the car magazine website, and you can read that for free, too. It's very entertaining. If you have the time in your life to get a little more knowledge, you can trust, even if you can't do the great driving yourself, all of these tests by people that really look at these, you know, characteristics, both on test tracks and real-world driving, and have all this extra equipment to run tests on, you know, skid pad, lateral acceleration, stuff I don't totally understand, but I know it's important, and they put it all together for you. So you can get well-educated on the best handling cars to buy, made in America or a lot or a little, whatever you think, from just doing this little bit of research. So, again, I started several months ago doing some test drives myself because, well, I am sort of a driver type, and I think I know the difference. And also reading all these magazines like crazy. I actually subscribe to three or four of them just so I don't have to hunt them out. And there's always more information from the hard copy than you get online, too. All right, moving on. Labor Day weekend. What's happening at Royal Oak this weekend?
Oh.
There's an issue about the Arts Eats Beats and Eats that has moved from Pontiac to Royal Oak, and even Craig Folly today on Detroit Today Show, which is now called the Craig Folly Show on WDET, talked about it this morning. But Amy, you have a commentary?
The issue you're mentioning is the open carrying of guns, of weapons. And
I got to stop you for a second.
Yes,
I believe,
sir?
In Michigan, open carry, that is, you can see the holster in the gun,
mm-hmm.
That isn't allowed anywhere in Michigan, except for police. But concealed carry is allowed.
I thought the issue that they were bringing up was that there was a picture of someone in Starbucks with a, you know.
Well, the pictures they use to illustrate the points are not the same. There's very few states, and I think Texas is one of them, where you can carry and you can have your gun visible
right.
to others.
Brandish, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
of course,
big time
Texas.
Cowboy gun in a right. big holster, or even, you know, a modern automatic pistol or something. I do not believe, and I may be wrong, that anyone in Michigan can brandish, that is, visibly carry a gun so that other people can see you carrying. It must be concealed carry, but that must be allowed by Michigan law right now in public places. And, of course, downtown Royal Oak is a public place.
Right.
Just like Pontiac was, but the issue never came up.
Yeah. But since they changed the venue, you know, it suddenly came to the forefront and, you know, gave these folks sort of a forum to press their issue. So It that came up. It was discussed. Jack Lessenberry had wrote a little editorial about it and said, why didn't Royal Oak do more to sort of stop this, bring it up in some fashion at the city council, that basically put this on hold for at least a couple weeks, and then the issue would pass. As the Arts Beats and Eats event takes place, the issue would pass, and they could address it more formally, right. you know, when it comes up. Well, I think Mayor Ellison did try, you know, they investigated ways that they could sort of not make this an issue, you know, this time around. They weren't able to, and, you know, basically said, they're hoping it doesn't become sort of a confrontational issue at Arts Beats and Eats.
It really sounds like it has been, though, isn't it?
It has, because it's been in big news sort of, you know, maker, and that, you know, they've interviewed residents. They've actually, my next-door neighbor was interviewed.
Oh, no kidding.
Just to say, hey, you know, what? How do you feel about this? Is it going to stop you from coming to the event? You know, what sort of concern is it? Is it going to be a showstopper for Arts, Beats, and Eats? And, you know, it doesn't seem to be. They've got new issues with parking now. So.
I just had a call from a listener, and of course, I just told me that he is both a gun owner and that he has a concealed carry license. But he claims, and he's a little closer to the issue than I am, certainly, that Michigan does allow open carry. Now, not because they use the term brandishing. Brandishing is where you have this gun sort of out and poking it at people and and maybe threatening in a way. That's, of course, not allowed. That's crazy. But he claims, and maybe from your reading, that open carry is allowed in Michigan in a holster. Well, but I think you need a license still. That is a
you do.
Concealed carry,
open carry. But I think that
was the
bigger issue.
Yeah, that's a bigger issue. By the way,
why,
I have
because they're threatening?
Well, some people would get scared to see the gun.
Yeah.
Of course, they might assume that, well, you're, a private detective or you're a policeman.
Because it's just not a common thing that we see. You're exactly right.
Right. Well, so we'll look into that more, and I don't want to jump to contusions, but open carry is a question here at least, and it may very well be legal in Michigan, but maybe you need at least the concealed carry permit in order to even open carry. Not sure about that.
Okay.
What's appropriate, folks? What do you think? In Michigan, I have to tell you this, and it's true, since concealed carry, which does require licensing, a training course, and approval from your local police department and so on, you know, it hasn't, people said, oh, it's going to cause more deaths and there'll be more guns around. And no, Michigan violence, gun violence has gone down. Since concealed carry, and we're not saying it's directly caused by that, but since concealed carry has been in place. In fact, I know a lot of police officers and police departments even, I'm not saying it's consensus here, that actually are in favor of concealed carry. And I think one of the reasons I can accept that is because it finally requires the gun owner to get some training.
Just training like and a background check.
Licensing.
Sure.
Can you drive a car? Can you shoot a gun straight?
Right.
Do you know where the safety mechanism is?
Do you know the rules,
do you know
the laws?
The laws that apply. Well,
huge.
That's not required of gun owners in Michigan. Now, you do have to go to your local police department if you buy a pistol and you sign a form.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't test you. You just sign a form and you're kind of registered. Therefore, they know where to get you, but where you live and so on. But it's I'm in favor. I mean, talking about dangerous weapon being a car, dangerous weapon is, of course, a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and... I'm all in favor of licensing because it may require training. And maybe, you know, just like police officers have to be recertified in terms of handling the gun by passing a target accuracy test every couple of years, or maybe more frequent than that even, maybe every 6 months. Hey, that should be for everybody that legally wants to own a gun. And I, across the country, the record of concealed carry and even open carry states is not that there's more crime or violence. And I'm not saying people are necessarily safer, but at least the numbers show crime and violence that's gun-related have gone down. And maybe there's a reason for it. So I'm just saying we've got to look at the real facts, the real statistics, not just what NRA, you say, well, the NRA, Koronek, you're just a mouthpiece for them. Okay, just like Michael Moore, I'm a lifetime member of the NRA. But I am for liberty reasons, not because I want to carry a gun or shoot somebody, even for self-defense. I want to avoid that at all costs. But I've received gun training, just like I've received motorcycle training beyond what the state requires. And apparently, I've received more car driving training than what the state now requires. And I think all those things are good. I think it makes us better citizens. But the issue is still one that people have to... Is Royal Oak going to be unsafe this weekend? Of course not. No. Records show, whether it's concealed carry or not, or open carry, it's not going to make you less safe. Folks, whether you should protest or complain or ask for more guns or concealed carry or whatever, that's up to you. It's a democracy, so make your opinion known. But there's a lot of evidence, primarily on the side of the NRA, that concealed carry, open carry will not make you unsafe. But I'd like to see these people trained, licensed, But concealed carry demands that now in Michigan. So, okay. Anything else, Amy? Thank you. Thank you, listener. I won't mention your name, but...
Well, if we jump to other activities, and it's still a little car-related, Greenfield Village, next weekend, September 11th and 12th, the Old Car Festival. Since you mentioned Jay Leno had purchased an electric vehicle,
yes,
there are some on display at Greenfield Village, just like Jay Leno is invested in.
Right. Green Car Journal. There's only four issues a year. They probably have a website, but I've got the magazine in front of me for the current issue is Summer 2010, Green Car Journal. Okay, and Jay Leno has an article here comparing the Ford Focus electric version, which we may see here at the end of 2011 or by early 2012. The new Focus will have electric option, although not initially, but later on, all battery powered. But he just bought a 1909 Baker electric car, and he owns a lot of cars. But he talks about the Baker from 1909, fully electric, quite easy to drive, two pedals, two brakes, and a tiller steerer, so not a steering wheel, but a rod you turn. You push the key, push the lever, and you move forward. he said the top speed is only 22 miles an hour.
That's safe.
He said it doesn't seem like much, but when you're driving a car that's as tall as it is long, it looks like a two-seater, folks. That's... It's very tall and isn't very long. Okay, he says you don't want to go much faster than 22 miles an hour, like trying to turn a corner.
Sure, a little tippy.
If it's very high up, the better handling cars, folks, are the lower ones, not the SUVs, but the sedans and the cars that are lower to the ground. And he says, don't forget there were no paved roads in those days, so you couldn't go very fast anyway,
Right.
In 1909.
And if you just shifted weight, you'd compensate for that tip-over
factor. It says here that Clara Ford, Henry Ford's wife, drove a Baker. Because she couldn't hand crank a Model T.
Well, there you go.
Talk about adoption even in the Ford family.
Yeah.
And Ford tried them. There's some models at Greenfield Village. I don't know if they'll have them out for view as part of the Old Car Festival.
Well, what's kind of neat, they'll show the assembly of a Model T, which they can assemble in just minutes.
Yeah,
so that's kind of neat.
12 seconds flat.
Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, also known as the Henry Ford, the 60th anniversary of the Old Car Festival next weekend, September 11th and 12th.
And that would start the day after. We have Green Party gubernatorial candidate Harley Mickelson on the show.
Cool.
That's going to be
Friday.
A choice in November. Alternative choices. That's what we want you to find out about here. Maybe this station does, we try to do what other things, other stations can't and can't get around to or don't believe in. We're not endorsing Green Party, but that is a choice for you. And who better to know about sustainability, ecology, the environment, electric cars?
Yep.
We'll see what Harley Mickelson knows
leave
about
that magazine out for him to see.
We'll absolutely.
Sure. Green Party.
Well, thank you for tuning in today. Have a great Labor Day weekend and maybe an extra day off. Enjoy yourself. Don't get stressed out. By the way, two of our WHR staff members became seriously ill this week, and without mentioning their names because they're so humble they don't want other people to know, but they are recovering, and I want to just send best wishes and thoughts to them if they happen to be listening. Now, Highway 61 with Joanne Kay coming up immediately here. It's WHFR Dearborn. Thank you, Amy and Dennis. The theme. Here it is. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.